Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And it's all about full compliance of the Constitution. And we have actually one person that has signed a pledge, and I'm hoping to get at least another one in a local race to sign the pledge, because I just don't have the time to run out there and to get people to do this. I'm hoping that Wyoming starts stepping up and they actually make the pledge a part of the GOP, not platform, but a part of the GOP bylaws, that these people that are going to wear or willing to run, they'll, one, take a test and, you know, basically test their knowledge on the Constitution. Because, folks, if a plumber has to know what he's doing, and an electrician has to know what they're doing, and a mechanic has to know what they're doing, and because they're stepping into an environment that is, you know, to some level of technical degree, and we're asking people to step in to govern us who take an oath to support the Constitution, and they don't understand the Constitution, then it's our fault that we don't demand that they understand that. Now, the irony here is that they're the ones that dictate what professions require standards, and apparently they have none for themselves. They'll create standards for florists. Oh, you've got to have a certificate to be, you know, this, you know, the school or technical school certificate to be a florist. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's still the same in Louisiana, but welcome back, Sean. Is that the same? Because it used to be you had to have a certificate. And as a matter of fact, I believe the big dog in importing flowers into Louisiana was the one that actually founded the school and operates the school so that everybody can get their certificates from them.
I would not be surprised, but I do not have any knowledge of that subject.
Yeah, I forget the guy's first name, Stossel, the Stossel report. Okay. So Stossel did a report on that, and he just,
John,
you know,
Stossel, yeah.
Yeah, so he did this report, and he kind of showed the irony, and he used Louisiana as one of those things, because what ends up happening is somebody that's got a little deep pockets is they want to protect their, you know, keep people from just being able to consider themselves a florist and, you know, start creating standards and laws to say, hey, you know, you can sell flowers, but you can't call those arranged flowers or whatever the technicality is, so that, you know, people, then they start advertising, you know, if you want real flowers, you got to come to a florist. And anyway, so this was back, I remember seeing this in the early 2000s when Stossel kind of reported on how labor and professions were getting regulated to the nth degree and used these different examples. So anyway, that being said, Jerry Wistrand is running his campaign, folks. He needs your help. And what I'd like to, before I get out of this, I had a conversation with a gentleman that I work with who can get signs, and we're looking at probably coming up with some generic signs that you can buy that will be PR campaigns. So if you're involved in the Republican Party and you have a Republican in your county, representing your county some way, legislative district, congressional district, what have you, and they don't represent you, and you are just fuming that these people don't deserve to be in office, then you can buy a sign that will basically, you put the name, you just give us the name, and we'll put the name in there, and the sign will basically state that, and I'll give you a good example. Lori Larson does not represent the good citizens of, let's say, Stevens County. And so you'll be able to buy a sign, or we'll put that name in there for you, put some, you know, little color to it, just like a regular campaign sign. And you can put that up on your grass or, you know, right there by the road, or if you've got a place, a good place for putting a sign up. And you can leave that up all year so that you can start helping everybody understand. And so the second line to this would be ask us, Reclaiming the Republic, and then we'll point them to our website and phone number. That way, you can give us the information, folks, to go to our Constitutional Counties page, and they will be able to find out in your county and in your state why these people are doing what they're doing. Because if you go there, you'll actually see how we identify in Stevens County. We're working on Franklin County for Washington, and we're working hopefully with other states soon to create this massive page of how Republicans, who supposedly are conservative, have completely turned their backs on the Constitution. And we have to start holding them accountable. So we talk about running a PR campaign. There's nothing better than letting everybody know the truth, that these people do not represent. If you have somebody under oath and they refuse, they turn their back on the Constitution and not supporting the Constitution, then they're not representing you anymore. Does that make sense, Sean?
Absolutely.
They're representing themselves. They're putting themselves above the Constitution as well as above you and your liberties. They just care about having the latitude, the flexibility to be able to go off and compromise your rights. And so, bottom line, folks, we have to start holding them accountable. So I believe that, you know, when you really look at a vacuum, does a vacuum suck? Yeah, of course it sucks, but it blows too. It works two ways. And that's why they took this idea of a vacuum and they created, you know, leaf blowers out of that same kind of motor. And so let's use the fullness, you know, let's suck things up here and blow them out there kind of mentalities. Let's use, you know, the all the resources that we have to the fullest of our potential so that we can get more done. So with all that being said, we are in the Massachusetts debates, and I have a big go back to do. We were just reading This is Mr. Bowdoin. Bowdoin, if I'm saying that right, Bowdoin. And we were just talking about legislative powers of the executive are negative. We're reading that little highlight. Now, at the very end, when we ran out of time to continue, and I didn't have really the time to expound upon this, but there's two things I wanted to point out. The last paragraph that Sean read basically went, and this is what he says, from whence it follows, if the foregoing principles are true, that we ought to adopt a confederation, presuming the different states well calculated for Republican governmental, for if they are not, their corruption will work their destruction separately. And if they are destined for destruction from their natural imperfection, it will certainly be more advantageous to have them destroyed collectively than separately, as in that case, we should fall under one great national government. What we have is not a one great national government. We have a confederation. So the states still had and still possess the power to be corrupt and to do bad things. Do you agree, Sean?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that means that, folks, let me ask you this, Sean, because this is something that people just don't get. Why is it that you have a right to bear arms?
So we can defend the nation.
Okay.
And ourselves.
Okay, yeah, good. Great answer. Bad question on my part. That wasn't the outcome I wanted, but that was the accurate outcome. Okay, so I need to learn to create better questions. So let me frame this better. Where is it that you in the state of Louisiana have this right protected to bear arms?
I would say in our Constitution.
Yeah, okay, that's general. Specifically, where in the Constitution is that right predicated for you in the state of Louisiana to have that right secured?
I do not know specifically. I can't name like.
Well, most people would say the Second Amendment. I mean, I can hear people yelling in their car as they just heard us, kind of gloss over.
Which said to state.
Yeah, I understand that. But see, right. The Second Amendment does not secure the state. As we've gone through the Constitution, there's a preamble to the Bill of Rights. And that preamble basically lays out this, so everybody understands that the Bill of Rights were further declaratory clauses, negative clauses, that were added to the Constitution to constrain the federal government from being able to meddle in any of these things. So does the Second Amendment protect you from your state government?
No, it protects our state government from the federal government.
There you go. So what would protect you today from your state government?
Bearing arms? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but what protects that right from your state government from being able to take that from you?
Oh, the Constitution of the state.
Yeah, but there's actually a clause in the Constitution that says no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. That clause right there takes every privilege and every immunity listed under the Constitution. It doesn't just say the comedy clause. Now, there's a lot of people out there that say, oh, that was just a repeating of the comedy clause. No. Now, this is the 14th Amendment, my friends. And there's a lot of people that have a problem with the 14th Amendment applying the Bill of Rights to the states. I ask everybody, please, 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 tell me which amendment you think you shouldn't have that right secured from you, from your state. Your freedom of expression? Should your state be able to take away your freedom of speech? Should the state be able to take away your freedom of religious expression? Should the state be able to take away your right to assemble, your right to petition them for the redress of grievances? Oh, that would be a great one to get rid of so that they could actually get away with all their tyranny. What about the right to not be not lose your property for quartering of, troops and so forth when the nation needs it? What about your right to be secure in your person? What about your right to, to have your bear arms? Go through every amendment and you tell me which ones you're willing to make sure that you put it in your Constitution to make, lay it out so that we do not want these rights secured, regardless of the 14th Amendment. Because I don't see anybody willing to give it up, but I see a lot of people that say, oh, that doesn't work that way. And absolutely it does. As a matter of fact, John Bingham, the author of that one very particular line, it was common knowledge and it was clear, and he had to reiterate when the radical Republicans were replaced and when Congress was trying to redefine it, he stood up and said, no, that clause applied to every privilege and immunity, specifically the Bill of Rights. Because at that point in time, those were the only amendments that really secured rights to the people, other than the personal servitude and the 11th Amendment. Because the 12th Amendment really didn't apply, it was just the Electoral College process, right? And the 13th Amendment was the personal servitude or slavery. The original 13th Amendment was basically stating that anybody that was a lawyer that was a part of the Bar Association couldn't be a citizen. So, I mean, the rights that were really being added to the Constitution were right there in the Bill of Rights that were being, secured. Additional rights are inalienable rights that were literally secured so the government could not create any laws to abridge those rights. And, folks, when you hear somebody argue that right there, that clause, no state shall make or enforce any law, that's the comedy clause. I want you to understand the comedy clause is a basic, weak little clause. in the U.S. Constitution, it's Article 1, Section 2, or Article 4, Section 2, my bad. And this is the comedy clause. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. It's kind of a reciprocity clause. But that right there is a reciprocity clause, which means that if your state allows you to drive at age 14 and get behind the wheel, that you can literally drive through every state with that valid state driver's license until they become a resident of your state. They have a right to be able to drive because the privilege of each state is extended to all. It's just the same thing with, was it Reinhauer or Reinhold or the guy, the young man that had the gun and a personal carry or what have you for the gun, went over to Minnesota and they tried to, you know, crucify him for that and ended
Rittenhouse, I think. Yeah.
Right. Whatever. That was the reciprocity clause. I mean, he had this established right to be able to do that, and he could go over there as a concerned U.S. citizen and carry his gun because he was granted that right by that state. That's the comity clause. The comity clause is completely different than the clause that I just gave you out of the 14th Amendment, that no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. How do you get the citizens of each state shall be entitled to the privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states? How do you get that out of the same thing? So, folks, when people start attacking and they say, well, the Bill of Rights should never have been applied to the states, just ask them, okay, so which rights do you think we shouldn't have protection from our state for? Search and seizure? Which one? Which one is okay for you to surrender? Because I believe that, can people opt out? Yes, they can. And there's a way to opt out. What's that way? The way of opting out is surrendering your citizenship. Because if you're not a citizen, then that law no longer, any law that they make that would abridge your privileges and immunities would not be applied to you. You would not be entitled to due process. You don't want due process? That's fine. Give up your citizenship. You don't want to be able to carry arms? Give up your citizenship. The problem is right now, the states haven't caught up with these people giving up their citizenship. I'll tell you what, watch what happens. There'll be chickens running around with their heads cut off. That's metaphorically speaking, folks. I don't want anybody driving off the road. Huh? But there's chickens running around with their heads cut off. When they finally realize that because they've given up their citizenship, they're no longer protected by these inalienable rights. Your right to petition government for the redress of grievances. Your right to assemble, so forth and so on. So, as we kind of look at this line that we were kind of going into, this confederation, and what Mr. Beaudoin was kind of saying, as a confederation, this created, by maintaining a confederation, this maintained a constitutional republic in the similitude or in the same manner as the Articles of Confederation. The only difference was a few more powers, not all powers. A few certain powers were granted, and they talked about the necessity of these specific powers. And in a nutshell, the powers pretty much are this, that all foreign trade was to be regulated by the federal government, the general government. In other words, they were to create the trade agreements between the states and foreign nations. All war and national security matters with external enemies, not, you know, your neighbor taking some property from you, but, you know, real people that hate Americans, British, back in those days, what have you. It was their responsibility to maintain a militia system, put up safeguards to protect us from external threats, have a navy, those types of things. So they had the security from external threats, and even when necessary, would be able to deal with internal threats, i.e. insurrections and invasions. And that's where they would be able to form an army. The fact of having an army, the only time that they really called an army when they didn't need, well, actually, technically, when you look at the Whiskey Rebellion became an insurrection. They didn't even want, Washington did not want to form the militia to go enforce the enforcement, or I should say the execution of that tax in Western Pennsylvania. What he wanted to do was he wanted them to, you know, come on, get with the program. He didn't want to use force. He didn't want people, he didn't want to create this stigma to say, hey, look how brutal this general government is. But when it came down to when they finally started becoming emboldened, because this is what happens, folks. Tell me if I'm wrong, Sean. Is if you let somebody start rebel rousing in your classroom, because as a teacher, you know, somebody takes, you know, a little latitude and challenges you, and then they challenge you a little bit more, and it seems like that line gets a little bit closer and closer to the deadly zone. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So how do you decide, you know, what, you know, where that threshold is? I'm an advocate to say you need to do it quickly. You know, you tell you tell your child, do not touch these power outlets. As a little child, you don't, okay, back in the days when they didn't have all this child safety stuff, right? You had to teach your children. You actually had to teach your children. Don't put your finger in there. That'll kill you. And so they didn't understand that. They didn't understand mortality. So what you had to do was you had to be mean, and you basically said, don't do that, and if they did it, you'd slap their hand. Or somehow you'd administer some form of punishment or fear tactic to keep them from doing that. So that when you said no, and they, you know, okay, I know not to do that. And good kids would never, you know, push those thresholds. And every once in a while, we had kids to push. It didn't mean the kids that push thresholds are bad kids. I don't want to say that. I was a bad kid, if that's the case, because I always push thresholds. I always challenge things. And so I think my parents are glad I did. but anyway, because if not, the family life would have been a lot easier. It would have been just a vacation, because you can't appreciate the sweet without having to deal with the, you know, some bitter in your life. I mean, you just don't even notice what is sweet until you've actually started having to drink from a bitter cup. Anyway, I hope that makes sense. But bottom line is, as we looked at what was happening in the Western Pennsylvania front, Washington did everything he could. He dragged his feet from pulling up the militia until the insurrection got out of hand and they started marching into Pennsylvania and so forth. Into Pittsburgh specifically, a very large populated area. That was became an insurrection, and he said, okay, we got to do this now. Bottom line, we were not to have any standing armies. There was no need for it. That's what the whole militia system was designed to do. And yet today we have a plethora of standing armies because the Forestry Service is a standing army. The IRS is a standing army. FBI, standing army. All of these are all unconstitutional standing armies. Any federal enforcement entity is a standing army. And when we get to Virginia's ratification debates, we'll kind of point that out. But in this particular case, we really had this huge blessing. Because what do you do when all of a sudden you receive information that identifies, you know, what a perfect government is, and then you realize, well, shoot, we don't have that perfect government, you know, we're not configured with that, with the same kind of perfect government. So in other words, perfect time for breaks, because we'll come back and I'll kind of explain all of this. We ended up having an opportunity of doing a massive redo-over because of the tranquility and peace as a nation we were experiencing. We could go through a very easy process without having to be dragged through the mud in humility to say, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So if you look back at the framing evolution of our Constitution from King George deciding to basically make the colonies pay for, you know, all of this warfare that they've been doing because their debt was going up and they just wanted to raise taxes on us because we were, you know, we became a pretty affluent part of the empire, very lucrative part. And so, as you've heard me say, King George made probably the worst business decision any businessman has ever made in the annals of history, because all he had to do to get his debt paid for and to be able to do what he wanted to do in growing his kingdom was to give us some representation. But instead, no. He's heck with that. You guys are subjects of ours, and we're going to, you know, I'll send over a brute squad, which if you look at the history of how we were created based on charters. In other words, these charters were a part of the kingdom that these colonies were being created for either religious purposes. They were being created, you know, for religious freedom purposes. That was the primary part of the charter, or for commercial purposes, or even for security purposes like Georgia. So the king was, you know, setting up these different colonies out here, and there were more than just the 13. It was just the 13 collective of North America that, you know, that were all together. Well, we decided to say, we're not going to do this. I don't know why the other colonies didn't, or whether they did or they benefited from it, but bottom line, the king still had Canada. So anyway, as we kind of look at the evolution of that bad business decision, we already had a level of maturity operating within the government and the framework that we evolved with under Britain. In so doing, we, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, to operate on a heart. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, change drivers while the car is moving along. But we realized that we had the big car, which was the Confederation, or I should say Continental Congress, was completely inept and, you know, impotent. And so they said, we got to fix this. We've got to do something about this. And so they did. What they did was they went into the convention, because at this point in time, like I said, we were being blessed with this level of tranquility that we could actually and safely, you know, get the driver out from behind the wheel of the car and somebody else slide across the old bench seat to get behind that wheel. Now, it had been a race car or something like that. There's no way we would have been able to do it. But anyway, but the point is, I'm just metaphorically helping you understand that we changed one government because it wasn't so intricately woven into a bunch of dependencies. Does that make sense, Sean? I mean, if you really look at, you know, what was the Continental Congress was like lipstick on a pig. It's not like they were performing a bunch of treaties. It's not like they were, you know, fighting war. They weren't engaged in that much. They had these responsibilities, but they couldn't do anything. And so it was a car going very slow. It was a, it wasn't a huge car, but it was a car going very slow. And so, and there was, you know, not a lot of road hazards at that point in time. But the point is that because we had, we didn't have these engagements, we weren't under attack or anything like that, we had the ability to change it out and make major changes to it. And, you know, while we were, coasting downhill, we changed out the engine or whatever. I'm just trying to help everybody understand that what a blessing it was that we were in the conditions that we were at that time to be able to change this, you know, this whole role of what that government was to be into something different. The problem is that the states were in their own way too interdependent on what they were doing to change. And so they had to come up with their own process of figuring out how to change their government on their own. The process is through a convention, but most people don't like to literally just, you know, knock everything down and build from scratch again, right?
Yes, sir.
Because it's cheaper. It's cheaper to kind of keep what you got and just make some adjustments. So for the most part, the 13 original states, they started making adjustments. But the 13, or all the new states coming in, we had an opportunity to get it right. And they actually were doing that in some ways. And you've heard me talk about the admission of new states and some of the problems. The federal government was in too much of a hurry that they didn't, you know, secure a militia as a standard so that the state could actually secure itself and maintain itself without, you know, with what resources it had within it and the threats within it, that they would have the ample ability to defend themselves before they became a state. With Indians, the, you know, the remnants of British troops and French troops or what have you, whatever the inner threats were to that state, they needed to have a militia instead of maintaining the cavalry. So we kind of covered how they, you know, the federal government got away with we'll take care of it for you. They should never have done that. Independent states are just that. They're independent, and they needed to be fully independent. And so as they started taking care of things, and I think everybody's, maybe that little light bulb is getting a little brighter. Ah, yeah. As they started doing a little bit more for us, like, you know, they maintained the cavalry, and they started doing this, it made it easier and easier to become dependent on them instead of being independent and sovereign. Now, as we look at this republic and the Constitution gave us a template, a map of how to establish our, you know, a multi-tiered republican form of government. Because the federal government only had powers over external things, it had no ability to govern anything internal. You know, it couldn't govern commerce, you know, within the states. It could only govern and assist as an umpire between commerce between states. That was it. So its ability to get involved into states themselves, it had no power to do that. It was never designed to do that. So states had the ability to start configuring themselves. This basically laid out this red carpet on the premise or on the axiom of the Declaration of Independence, that governments are instituted by we the people, by men, that by the consent of the governed, we will be governed. Instead of teaching everybody this, because truth be told, there were some bright men that understood those words of the Declaration of Independence. And when people read them that may be, you know, literate enough to read, they may go, wow, these are some awesome words. They don't truly and deeply appreciate or profoundly appreciate and understand what those words are really saying as these men that wrote them. And so as states were being built, we didn't have those profound men going out to those states to say, this is what you need to do. As a matter of fact, this was kind of like every child. Every child has an opportunity as it grows to determine what it's going to do. Self-determination. That was the design of this system. Go ahead and fail. If you fail, then, you know, you'll have to figure out what you need to do to fix yourself. But that's okay. Because one state failing cannot bring down this republic. The federal government failing will bring down this republic. There's a huge difference. And so as they talked about Montesquieu and the perfect government being a Republican small government, when you really look at what they were talking, how they were criticizing that this Republican government at the national level wasn't going to work, well, it wasn't the single government. Because the national government was no longer, on the original design, it was going to be a single government. But they didn't, they abandoned that. And they said, well, we're still going to have the states. Well, but the states could have and should have realigned themselves to basically go down. And when we get to Virginia, we'll actually see with Mr. Gray where he says, well, basically, our counties are similar to, our counties to the states are similar to the states to the federal government. Where, you know, we need to have a republic. He doesn't say that, but he creates this likeness. He creates this, you know, association of likeness that, you know, our county governments are integral governments as well. But in those days, government didn't do that much, especially with once the state was doing what it was doing, that was it. We weren't using, the only reason we had people involved in supervisors for the county, having a board of supervisors way back then, was to make sure that what the state was doing wasn't going to have bad effects on your county. You know, so it was more of just kind of like a, you know, an association. It wasn't that we were seeking government and more government in our lives in our county. This is why we, the people, marginalized the importance of this relationship of our government. Because we've marginalized the most important government in our lives. The government that's actually going to decide to put a stop sign right outside your dwellings, or, you know, where you, whether you, you know, come into a roundabout or a stop sign. That government is not the federal government. That government's not the state government. That government's the county government. The government that actually makes the decision of, we're not going to do any businesses like this, or we're not going to have any businesses like this in this county. Because we want to have agrarian. We want to do this. We want to do this. We're not going to allow that. We're not going to allow this type of development. You want to have a high rise? You know, go to another county. We're not doing high rises here. That's where those types of decisions, and they should be. They should be in your hands, in your county. The whole point of this long diatribe is, folks, until you, we the people, demand that that county is your government, because until you do that, it right now is a puppet for both the federal government, for the federal government, the bureaucrats, the lobbyists, as well as the state government. There's all these people that are coming in and telling your county legislators what to do. And until you seize control of them and create a constitution, say, yay, verily, these are the things you do, and we start locking down access to our legislators, and then basically start creating the true pecking order. Because if we, the people, are the fountain of political power of this republic, which we are, then once we seize and take control of our county government, and we have enough county governments that we've kind of seized control of. Now, I don't want to get into the operations, but you have to get your ducks in a row first before you can have this state constitution convention and reel in your state, which means that you may create a constitution for your county, but that constitution really doesn't go into full effect until you actually rewrite your state constitution, where you pull those powers that the state has back to the county where they belong. It's kind of like right now, the federal government has assumed powers that they shouldn't have, that should be pulled back to the states. And many of those should be actually pulled back to the county, like energy, like agriculture, like housing, and on and on and on. Labor. Do you want your state government to dictate And I think that when people start looking at your state right now and how the democracy, or the, I should say the population centers, the mob rule is, you know, just decimating you and your wallet and your property and everything else, why wouldn't you want to do this? Why wouldn't you want to secure and create a constitutional republic, a hybrid? And that's where the term hybrid comes in. You have a republic at your county level. You have a republic at your state level. And at the national level, you have a republic. So we have three. It's a hybrid. And every time you step up, it's a little more limited, a little more limited, a little more limited. So hopefully this all makes sense. Did this help, Sean?
Yes, sir.
All right. Because sometimes, you know, we just go through the documents. And I realize that there's never, you know, I don't get into these details to help people start seeing what is really in front of us and the opportunity we have. We are not subjects. We don't have to be subjects to that state government. We have a county government, and that county government is the parent of that state government. And if you want the evidence to prove that, then just let me know. Because it's easy peasy. Just like when the states pulled together and created from the Continental Congress and the Articles of Confederation, they pulled back and said, we're only going to give you these powers. Because as Madison states, governments are formed by the dignity of the sovereigns. Well, where is the true dignity of the sovereigns in our republic? It's with we the people. That means that when we create our first government, our county government, and we give it very specific powers, then we're literally creating a government by the dignity of our sovereignty, that they can do these very specific things. And we have full buy-in. But right now, government is, they're just literally out there making it up as they go along. This is where I would love to have, you know, a lot of these show hosts have, you know, these little buttons, or they just play a little soundbite, you know, where you hear, instead of them saying it, they play this little thing and you hear this whoop. And I would love to have that Monty Python, you know, whether it's John Cleese or any of them, they're making it up as they go along. Kind of thing, because I'd love to play that every time to help people start seeing that, you know, that's what we're subject to. They don't have a plan. They're just making it up as they go along, and they're spending more money. Oh, shoot, that didn't break us. We need to spend more money, because their plan is to break us, and they're hoping that, well, this next one, like in Washington State, by implementing an income tax, well, maybe that'll break the people of Washington and destroy the Washington financial, you know, governing and so forth, and crush us completely, where the government basically becomes bankrupt. What is that, the Cloward Piven?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because that's the model that they use, and that's the goal. That's what they're trying to do. So anyway, any questions or anything you want to add? Or
I was just thinking of the analogy of what's going on in like these sanctuary cities, in these places like that. It's what you're talking about, but they're using it for evil, you know, for nefarious purposes, where they have these gun laws in certain areas. The states in the cities, that the city council passed this or the city council passed that, allowing immigrants and giving money to immigrants and housing immigrants, and they have all these laws that are for specific purposes, and they're like, oh, we have autonomy because the city government passes. Yeah, they're using what you're talking about, but to hurt you instead of secure your liberty, they're using it to take away your liberty. And if we need to flip the script on that, like I've seen some counties have come along with outlawing abortion in their county,
right?
Because the government comes up with that.
And right,
I mean, that's what you're talking about. Correct.
But you can't, until you actually you know, actually have that level or relationship with your state government. In other words, this is why, folks, we have to ultimately have a county convention, but you have to have a county, when I say a county convention, a state convention by the counties to rewrite your state constitution. But before you do that, every county has to have their own constitutional convention where the people, and folks, I'm working with the Mountain Patriots to basically create a template of how to secure your liberties in ensuring that certain powers, because when you look at what powers you want these men to have, then we'll basically give you those types of things, you know, and it'll be like a, forgive the expression, like a Chinese menu or a smorgasbord where you can, you know, put whatever on your plate. The problem you have is that every function of government you want government to do, you will have to pay for it. This gets the state away from doing this and using this taxation money to play with it and corrupt by giving it to union bosses and you paybacks, kickbacks, what have you. The bigger the pot, the bigger the government, the more corruption and payouts. At a county level, it's a lot easier to audit, it's a lot easier to control, and down at the city level, I mean, we still see corruption down in those levels, but it's not the magnitude of the federal corruption, now is it?
No, and it's easier to root out as well.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. So that's my point, folks. We have, when we take control of our government, which means that we're going to actually have to be more involved. It's a, if it's a self-governing system, the thing that's required is that first four-letter word.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people have a problem with nowadays. There's so much focus on convenience and ease and this high standard of living that right. People just don't even understand the necessity for self-government requiring that vigilance.
Yes.
And that involvement.
Yes.
You can't have it the way you want it if you don't make it the way you want it.
Or you get what you deserve. Because if you're not going to control it, it's just like your children. If you're not going to teach your children,
yeah, there you go.
Then you get what you deserve. If your children, you know, take your cars out and damage them and they're completely, you know, out of control, you get what you deserve. If your government's out of control, because folks, what is our government? It is a child created by we the people. We've created this entity to do these very specific things. If we do not control that child, believe you me, it will start reversing roles. The next thing you know, that child's going to try to be the parent. That is inevitable, which is one of the reasons why what a godsend our Constitution is, because these men did not create, they created a system with checks and balances to keep it from becoming, you know, a quickly becoming a parent government. It really required men to violate the Constitution, to violate it by assuming implied power. Everything that they did were all violations. The beautiful thing and the godsend is violations can be ended immediately. If the power has not been legitimately granted, it must end. When we put our foot down and say, you can't do that anymore, what does it take to do that? It takes a minimum majority to say, you can't do it anymore. And unfortunately, because we've allowed it to get this bad, we do need a minimum majority. Now, when you look at this, I want you to help everybody understand. Out in your county, a minimum majority isn't 50%. A minimum majority may be only 10 or 12%. And I say that because most of the problems you have at your county level aren't really that bad. You've got some pretty good people that are running it. And or most people want the rule of law. So, you know, when you start telling people, hey, this is why I go back to, and I don't think I talked, did I talk about the signs, Sean?
Yes, you did.
Okay, so going back to those signs, when you start taking control and calling out those people in government, your sheriff does not represent the people of this county. If he's not willing to protect your rights, then you need to start putting up PR signs that basically call them out. You need to start putting up PR signs to call out your county commissioners, your auditor, your prosecutor, your judges. You need to start calling them out, and you need to start using petitions. The more active you get in basically self-governing and calling people out, then the faster it's going to be. So my point is that you won't need 50%. People are going to hear because they don't even realize. They're so busy in their lives, they don't realize that John Schmuckatelli over here, you know, is really the problem. That what they just did was so, you know, destructive, and they don't even know about it. A good case in point in Stevens County, where they actually had this Constitutional Compliance Committee, you know, moving forward. And then all of a sudden, a couple of people changed out, one person changed out, be an election, and that person was basically I'll just say a tool, an idiot, and that person basically started doing the bidding for other people that they should not have been involved in, prosecutor, auditor, and so forth. And folks, when you look at, you know, how we were going to have Ground Zero established, then all of a sudden, because these people are doing everything they can to stop constitutional compliance, folks, these people are under oath. Every single person that has stood up to say this Constitutional Compliance Committee must be stopped, they were directly violating their oath. Because the whole point of constitutional compliance is to ensure that the Constitution is being supported and followed. Which means that they don't want to follow it, which means that they're doing everything they can not to, which means that they are directly... How many times do I have to connect the dots, Sean?
Oh, a few more times, probably.
it's okay, so that's why we need to get involved. We need you to get involved. Apparently, we didn't get anything covered with the Massachusetts debates today. Got less than a minute. Anything you want to add?
No, sir. I think you did a good job laying it out. It's pretty simple when you look at it. It's just like the gospel. We could sit here and talk for days about the nuances of scripture and faith, but it really comes down to basic principles, and it's the same thing.
Right.
Self-governance.
So, folks, patience. I'm working. We're going to try to have a template out there so that you can start putting up negative PR signs to basically start calling out your public servants, calling out your judges. These people aren't going to like it, but that's a First Amendment right of speech. You can put it on your property. You can put it out on, you know, other areas, as a matter of fact, on businesses or what have you, especially businesses that, you know, may not like, you know, what's going on. Folks, we need to start banding together. We need to actually start saying, hey, you don't like that? Then create that county Constitutional Compliance Committee. Do what you need to do. Start getting out there and supporting the Constitution and protecting us from this out-of-control state and out-of-control federal governments, period. That's your job. You took an oath to support the Constitution, and it starts with you. And folks, technically, it starts with you, we the people. There we go. And so with my last line that just is apropos and fits, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.